Welcome inside the Fantasy Sports Network studios. This is FST, and we are live. Chris Meany, Mike Omelon here in Toronto. Thanks for taking the time to join us. We're going to continue with theme weeks, baseball. It is Roto Experts Week here at Fantasy Sports Network. The Fantasy Baseball Exclusive Edge Draft Guide was released yesterday. There's all kinds of rankings on there, projections, depth charts. There's a lot of good stuff actually there. So we'll talk to Michael Waterloo in a little bit and talk about some players that he's targeting, or actually some players that he's avoiding, players that I actually want to target. So I'm interested to see what he has to say about that. Plus, Jim Saunders from NumberFire is going to stop by as well. He just has a big analysis from the 2016 DFS NFL season. Football, it doesn't stop, Mike, but what you and I want to talk about is hockey. On the ice tonight, there are eight games in the NHL, so we are going to give you some targets, and there's one guy I think is a must-play in Pittsburgh, but we're going to start with the Colorado Avalanche and the Buffalo Sabres. That's right, we're going to start with those two teams.
Oh, Buffalo.
Mike, you going to play in the Avalanche tonight?
No chance.
No chance.
All Sabres. This is one of the first things I do when you're starting your DFS lineup. You see who's playing the Colorado Avalanche because they're just not very good. They allow the most goals against in the NHL. So that's just a beauty. Over 32 shots allowed per game. Woo. So you just got whoever's playing Colorado, you take the opposite team. And I'm going to play Jack Eichel tonight. Eichel, I mean, this guy, you know, never get any love. Hockey night in Canada, meaning who do they talk about? They talked about Austin Matthews. Jack.
I'm not surprised.
You love that. And Jack Eichel had three assists.
Yeah.
Killed it that night. This guy, I mean, just a shot machine.
Yeah. Loves to shoot the puck.
Maybe people don't know that. This guy leads all forwards in shots per game in the NHL. And I have to say all forwards because it's Mr. Burns that leads the NHL in shots per game.
Former
but Jack forward. Eichel, just a stud. 7 points last five games. Play Jack Eichel tonight. 54 shots in the month. And in comparison, Sidney Crosby has 35.
It's actually unbelievable.
It's
and watching Eichel live in Nashville about 3 weeks ago, he was by far the best player on the ice. Not a lot of people look at him as a shooter, more of a playmaker, you're right. And why not pair him up with his linemate, Sam Reinhardt, who's pretty cheap tonight, $4,700 on DraftKings, somebody that we've been talking about a lot in season-long formats, is somebody you could play. Goes through a little bit of a cold streak, but if you look at the last five games, got 5 points and 13 shots on net. So $47 there on DraftKings is nice. FanDuel, $5,100. So it's not a bad option, as you mentioned, Colorado struggling, as our friend Cam likes to say.
Usually when Eichel has a big game, so does Reinhardt. So it's a great combination to go with.
I was looking at maybe Robin Leonard tonight because Buffalo also gives up a lot of shots as well, but he's the second most expensive goalie tonight on DraftKings, and I'm not willing to go that far, but I just keep an eye on him in tournament plays. It's like Mike Smith. We've talked about it before. You know, playing on a team that allows a lot of rubber, all those points eventually add up, and that's what's happening with Robin Leonard lately. I feel like every other night he's making 40 saves. Let's go over. Let's talk Minnesota and Dallas. Let's talk about the Wild, the former North Star connection. Remember, I mean, those jerseys are fantastic. So these two teams are going to go head to head tonight. It's hard to pick what Wild guy to roll with, but man, they're all pretty cheap. Mika Koivu's 5'8", Granlund 6'4", Zucker's 4'9", Pominville is cheap. Let's talk about Granlund and Zucker though. Zucker has been pretty cold lately, but maybe a good GPP play.
Yeah, I think it's a great GPP play because you look at, again, we picked on the Colorado Avalanche, highest goals against in the NHL. Who's number two? It's the Dallas Stars, second highest. So you play the Minnesota Wild. Also, Stars on the road, they got the highest goals against average on the road. Just not stepping the puck, you know, letting the puck in a whole lot on the road. It's a player Wild. It's crazy. Yeah. You look at the star talent on the board tonight. You see Sidney Crosby. You see Jamie Benn, Connor McDavid. I looked at him like, I got to play Mikael Granlund. And that's how amazing he's been. He's been a top 10 player
over the
last 2 months. This guy's got 14 points in his last 17 games. He's got 11 points in his last 10. He's got 6 and 7 shot games over his last 5. He's just on fire.
He's got 50 points on the year with a plus 27 rating.
I mean, he's been a top 10 the whole season. He's been unbelievable. It's a beautiful matchup against the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, it really is a nice matchup, you're right. And for Zucker, who's gone pointless a little bit, just to be a little bit different, if you know, you got your cash game plays, you get your safe plays, and we just mentioned a couple in Buffalo, but if you want to be a little bit different, you think that people are going to go to Parisi, go to Pominville, who's been hot lately, maybe Granlund. But Zucker's somebody that stands out, has been pretty cheap, and he's just putting pucks on net so far this season, 116, but a lot of those have come over the past month or so. We had Neil Parker from RotoWire on a couple weeks ago on Home Ice Advantage. He said Zucker, the most points in the NHL per 60 minutes. Oh, not a lot of people know about that. Yeah. A lot of people looked at Crosby, looked at Malkin, looked at those guys, but Zucker's been pretty impressive as well. So
back-to-back four-shot games, too. So
back to Buffalo for a second. I want to bring up Rasmus Ristolainen, and I know the guys worked hard to get some work for Rasmus Ristolainen. This is unbelievable, Mike, and I was looking at just some of the numbers here. There's one defenseman in the NHL that has at least 130 shots, 130 hits, and 130 blocks, and I already gave it away. It's this guy, Rasmus Ristolainen. He's now down under the $6,000 mark. FanDuel, that's a steal at $5,100. $5,900 on DraftKings. This guy does it all, man. He does absolutely everything. Just to put it in perspective of other defensemen, Boychuk, Martinez, Bufflin, and Weber, the only other defenseman with 100-plus blocks, shots, and hits. Yeah. This guy's got 130 of everything. So if you're looking for a defenseman, maybe pay up for him.
Yeah, it's amazing. A lot of time with defensemen, you'll see maybe them just hit two categories, maybe just hits and points. But like you said, Rasmus Ristolainen is all three, hits, blocks, and points. And you get points for blocks on FanDuel, on DraftKings, on all these sites. You don't get points for hits. So the blocks is an extra key for Ristolainen.
There was a game this year where he played over 30 minutes, played the entire overtime, and then the very next night had a back-to-back and still flirted with 30 minutes. He gets a lot of ice time. All right, finally, one more game to talk about. Let's go to Pittsburgh and talk about the Penguins and the Winnipeg Jets. You know, ever since Crosby lost some of his line mates, other people are coming in. Chris Kunitz, Jake Gensel's one who's stepped up and has been playing with Sidney Crosby, at least the last game. But I've noticed over the past couple games, Mike, is his ice time has risen from about 15, 16 minutes to 18 and 20. That's what he's played the last two nights. He's got a goal and assist the last two games with eight shots on goal. Crosby's a little bit more expensive, 1 point away from 1,000, but hey, believe it or not, this is the coldest spell of Sidney Crosby. Maybe he's thinking about that point too much.
Maybe. Again, it's funny. We keep picking on these bad teams.
Who's number three goals against?
Avs one, Stars two, Jets number three goals against. So you got to play your Pittsburgh Penguins. Sidney Crosby a little too expensive. So like you said, Chris, Jake Gensel played with Crosby last game, scored a goal, five shots on net. It's a great little cheap play that you could throw in your lineup.
It's all of these guys that are just stepping up and playing with Crosby. And you look at Crosby over the past few years, who is he going to play with? They're bringing Kessel. He's going to play with Kessel. No, he's not going to play with Kessel.
Nope.
He's not going to play with Chris Kunitz. He's playing with him now. He's going to play with Connor Sheary. He's going to play with Brandon Rust.
Sheary's out. Rust is out long term, they're saying.
Jake Gensel, I think,
Gensel's
is a decent
be on the line
deep
for at least a couple weeks.
A decent deep league ad, I think,
should
in seasonal
well.
Format. So he's fairly cheap. We just saw him. And I'm actually
two goals in his NHL debut this season.
And I'm actually leaning towards Malkin tonight because he's $7,700. Crosby's $8,500 on DraftKings. I understand. I just said he's a point away. He is pointless in six of his last seven games. I think he's going to get that point today. But as for Malkin, he returned from a knee injury the last time out. He had a goal and an assist. He's got 56 points there in 48 games, as you see, so why not him? A goalie tonight before we get out of here? Is it Jake Allen?
Hard to argue with the Blues, but how about Mike Condon again? He's playing the New Jersey Devils. Devils don't score. The only team the Devils would score against are the Colorado Avalanche. Drew doesn't like that. They can't stop any. You know, they can't score a goal. So you play Ottawa Senators.
Another shot at the Colorado Avalanche. Yeah, on pace for the fewest regulation wins in NHL history. St. Louis in their last five games, though, they're allowing 0.6 goals per game. Over their last seven, it's like one.
Beauty,
Mikey O.
Set some lineups. Let's challenge Jeannie Bouchard to a bet tonight. See how she does.
So you think she had a good time last night?
It looked okay. It didn't look that great. The guy looked, he's kind of not. Yeah. Didn't seem super fun.
Yeah. Well, apparently
we'd be a bit more fun.
Apparently he's getting a second date, so it had to be okay. Stick around. We're going to talk some fantasy baseball here. The exclusive Edge package dropped yesterday. We'll talk about that and players to avoid come draft day. Stick around. FSC will continue right here on Fantasy Sports Network. Welcome back inside the Fantasy Sports Network studios. This is Fantasy Sports Today. I'm Chris Meaney. We are live from Toronto, and yesterday, the exclusive Edge Draft Guide released, the Fantasy Baseball Draft Guide. I'm telling you what, it is fantastic. There's a lot of great stuff on there, projections, rankings, depth charts, players to avoid, players to target, value, rotisserie leagues. Honestly, I can go on forever, and this is Roto Experts Week. Well, let's bring in Michael Waterloo from Roto Experts, who has his hands all over that draft guide. Michael, welcome to FST, man. How are you?
Hey, Chris. I'm doing well. Appreciate you having me on today to talk about some fantasy baseball.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, you're all over this draft guide, doing some fantastic work, and you and I are going to talk about players to avoid, and you've written already about some players to avoid come draft day, so this can be no surprise for you and I, but surprise for the viewers. And what I just want to start with, actually, is Michael Brantley, because he's been in the news lately, his shoulder injury. A couple years ago, we see him, even 3 years ago, we see him get, you know, the 2020 season, followed up at 10-10, and then last year, only plays a handful of games, dealing with just a numerous setbacks, and also what came out yesterday, that he's most likely not going to be ready for spring training. So clearly this is a player that you're going to avoid come draft day, but is there a point in the draft? Is there a league deep enough that you're willing to take a flyer on him?
Yeah, I think there definitely is a league deep enough, but when it comes to drafting guys, I'm all about taking upside. I'm all about taking some risks in the draft. You really have to in any kind of fantasy sport to win. But when it comes to injuries, I'm very risk averse. It was the same way in football with Jamaal Charles. I want nothing to do with him this year. And that's kind of how I am with Michael Brantley. It's always like, okay, shoulder's getting better. He's going to be back. Okay, limited time back last year. I think it was like maybe 11 or 12 games, and he's out for the year again. Okay, he's hitting off a tee. He's getting close to finishing, and what do you know, something else flares up that he's not going to be ready for spring training games. So I'm going to let somebody else take this shot on him, and I'll let them see how it works out for them. At the time that I wrote this last week, he had an ADP at 216, which, you know, if he is fully healthy and you get 150 games out of him, great, that's going to be a steal for you if he returns back to form. But I'd rather take guys such as Max Kepler or Nomar Mazara, who have great upside and no injuries that they're dealing with around the same range.
Could you imagine Brantley, a healthy Brantley in that Cleveland offense, though? I mean, that would be pretty fantastic for sure, because he is a terrific ball player. As you mentioned, there's just some risk there. Alex Reyes recently diagnosed needing Tommy John surgery. Pretty unfortunate, Michael, because he was a lot of people's favorite targets, man. I've seen this guy go as early as 20 pitcher off the board, 25, but now we have to start looking at maybe just replacements. I just want to talk about the St. Louis Cardinals rotation. You got Lance Lynn coming back from Tommy John surgery, Carlos Martinez, who spent some time in the DL. Mike Leake is always somebody we like to target against in DFS. Michael Wacha, is this guy going to be able to step in? Luke Weaver now. Is there anybody in this situation, St. Louis, that you actually like? And maybe touch on Wacha, because when he came into the bigs 2 years ago, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball, and he was just fantastic, flirting with no hitters, getting it done. But now he's got that shoulder injury. Is this somebody you're willing to take a shot on as well?
Well, as far as Alex Reyes, you mentioned, I thought the hype was getting out of hand with him.
Yeah, I agree.
He wasn't even projected to have a rotation spot, and plus his control was just not where it is. But that being said, he's the best pitching prospect in all of baseball, so it was very sad to hear that he needs Tommy John surgery. So now is a buy low opportunity in dynasty leagues if you're willing to wait till about 2019 to have him back in full. But as far as the Cardinals rotation goes, Carlos Martinez, I absolutely love him. I think you can see him take a giant leap forward this year. I'm not saying anything that the rest of the industry isn't in on, though, with him. Only concerns with him are his shoulder. But as far as the rest of the rotation, it's just kind of like, you know, yikes. I don't really want Adam Wainwright. I was in on him last year, and that really bit me. Mike Leake is what he is. Like you said, DFS at best. Lance Lynn coming back from Tommy John surgery, so he's going to be limited. He won't have his full workload behind him. And then you have Michael Wacha. And Michael Wacha is one of the guys I wrote about that I'm avoiding. I just don't really see it with him outside of his name. His Sierra has dipped down for his past 4 years from 325, 374, 402, and 431 last year. And he just really wasn't that great. There's still rumblings he might head to the bullpen. The Alex Reyes injury really it pumps the brakes on that a little bit, I guess you can say, is the best way to put it. But you still have Luke Weaver, as you mentioned. He's going to come up. He's a great prospect that isn't getting as much recognition because of Alex Reyes. But with the injury concerns of Adam Wainwright and Lance Lynn, I think Weaver is going to crack that rotation. If they're all healthy, Walker's going to be going to the bullpen. And so I really don't want him. Let somebody else draft him that recognizes his name and let them drop him come June or July.
I agree with you 100%, Michael. I think he's going to be in the bullpen for sure. Wacha, flamethrower is what they used to call him in St. Louis, but now he just can't stay healthy. It's too bad because there is some upside with him, but I do expect him to go back to the bullpen. One guy I was actually surprised about that you wrote about is Aaron Nola. Not a bad season from him, really. 9K per 9, walks were under 3, ground ball rate was solid, but some issues with some injuries down the stretch of the season. What's your projection with Aaron Nola this year?
Well, you know, I wrote about him and I said, if any pick on this do not draft list is going to make me look bad, it is the Aaron Nola pick, because, you know, he's a popular player for a lot of guys that they want him. But who's the real Aaron Nola is kind of my question. Mm. He's a 57th starter off the board for NFBC ADP data. First 12 starts, 265 ERA, 0.99 whip. His last eight starts, 9.82 ERA and 2.06 whip. He went from a must-start pitcher to somebody that you were dropping or you were benching. There's no way that you were going to start him. I just don't really believe in his strikeouts. He had 9.8 per nine innings, which is great. He held that all year. But his 9.6% whiff rate puts him with a J.A. Haps and Dallas Keuchel of last year of the world. So I really just don't really believe in it. His velocity isn't that great, low 90s with his fastball, and he really needs people to chase pitches out of the zone. I'd rather take the chances on Vince Velasquez for the higher ceiling or even the higher floor with Gerard Eichhoff than I would with Aaron Nola, especially he was dealing with that elbow strain in the second half of the season there. So I think he'll pitch somewhere around 170, 180 innings. I just don't know how good they will be.
Yeah, you got to wonder how many innings he's actually going to get, because you make a good point. I mean, really, in his first full season, he looked tired down the stretch, and certainly the elbow issue didn't help him at all either. Let's move over to let's go to Gene Segura, because Gene Segura, we've always seen the talent with him. Just a few bad incidents, off-field incidents, even on-field incidents, getting hit in the face with a baseball bat when he's on deck from Braun. I mean, that's unbelievable as well. And then some issues, obviously, is some personal issues with him. But when he was in Arizona last year, Michael, he had a pretty good season. But now he moves to Seattle. Are you concerned there's some big-time regression, especially from the home runs that he put up 20 last season?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the average, the home run, and the speed. The speed's always going to be there, but if you look at the Mariners, they stole 56 bases in 84 attempts last year, and that wasn't that many as far as baseball-wide for teams. But you look at Arizona, and I believe they had 137 steals and 168 attempts last year. So they run, whereas the Mariners don't. Maybe they got him because they want to run more. Okay, I'll buy into that. But what I'm not buying into is him going from the second best hitting ballpark in all baseball in Arizona. It's right behind Coors. People don't pay attention to that enough. To a pretty neutral Seattle in Safeco Field. People think that's a pitcher's park. It's really kind of neutral. But there's just no way he's going to repeat those numbers. And if his average falls back around 246 or 257, where it was 2014, 2015, his numbers are very similar to Rajay Davis from a year ago. So, I mean, of course, I expect Rajay Davis's power to come down, but that's what you're kind of drafting there at the 53rd overall spot. I would rather wait about 100 picks or so and just take Tim Anderson, who has a very similar skill set at a much, much cheaper price.
Yeah, that's a pretty good comparison, too. I'm excited to see what Tim Anderson's all about in a full season in the bigs. He only played about 100 games last season and still looked pretty good in those 100 games. Michael, unfortunately, we ran out of time. There's a whole lot of other players I'd like to get to with you, but let's do this again soon, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
All right. Give Michael Waterloo a follow on Twitter. And honestly, check out this Fantasy Baseball Exclusive Edge Draft Guide. There's a lot of good stuff in there. That's just one little sample size of everything that Michael has done as a part of this draft guide. We're going to switch gears. We're going to talk some football. That's right. DFS NFL with Jim Saunas from NumberFire. We're going to take a look at the 2016 season and just see what it was all about with Jim. Stick around. You're watching Fantasy Sports Today right here on Fantasy Sports Network. Thanks for taking the time to stick with me. Chris Meaney here. Jim Saunas from NumberFire.com is going to join me right now. And this is where he wrote that article, NumberFire.com, which we were talking about earlier. Jim, welcome. How well did high ownership players perform? This is a DFS article. You did some wicked analysis here week by week, position by position, including kickers. So well done. because you can't forget the kickers, man. But really, I guess I know your reasoning behind it, but you want to tell the people why you wanted to dig into this and what did you take away from it all?
Yeah, I mean, it's always been a struggle for me trying to decide, is it worth it to use guys who are high ownership? And a big part of that is saying, well, if they're going to perform anyway, you may be more incentivized to use a guy who's going to be high ownership. But if they don't perform as well as you would hope, then there's some more incentive to fade that guy and try to look for a lower owned guy. And based on the results here, it's going to skew me a lot more towards fading high ownership players in the future because they really didn't do very well. The way I looked at it was, I set a baseline of value for each player. Now, this wasn't like, you know, 2x value that you're looking for most guys. It was based on all players who had at least 1% ownership on a given week based on FanDuel's ownership and scoring. And so, like, for tight ends, it was 1.43x ownership, which is well below what you usually want. And they still failed to hit that most of the time. So to me, it really said there's a ton of incentive to fade high ownership players, especially at a position like tight end where the bust rates are just so stupendous.
Yeah, what I thought was pretty interesting from the article is you had a headline, "Don't use road running backs." You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking at bust rates by specification, so again, bust rate was based on not hitting that baseline value. And if we're looking at running backs, home running backs only busted 26.67% of the time. Road chalky running backs did so 60% of the time, which is just this absurd discrepancy. And there was actually a 50-50 split between half the running backs that were chalky were at home and half were on the road. So if it's a chalky running back who is going to be at home, I'm pretty inclined to still use them. You know, if they fit my process, I'm fine with that. But if they're on the road, that's kind of like a tight end-ish bust rate. So I'm probably not going to be using chalky running backs on the road unless it's like a David Johnson or Le'Veon Bell, who's guaranteed to be involved in the passing game if things get out of hand. But I think that in most cases, that's not going to be a place I'm going to go.
When looking at all this data, did you feel the same way about quarterbacks? So many times, Jim, you and I have talked about quarterbacks, Kirk Cousins at home compared to on the road, Ben Roethlisberger at home compared to on the road. Did you see any of that in the data as well with this position?
Yeah, with quarterbacks, it was less defined. The bust rate for home quarterbacks was 41.94%, and it was 45% for those on the road. So there was a split, but it wasn't necessarily as big as I would have assumed. It was actually a bigger split at wide receiver, which was opposite of what I would have guessed. I would have thought they would have been, you know, closer to normal, but only 34% of home wide receivers busted compared to 51% on the road. And, you know, like, you have this narrative in your head of, okay, if they get down, they'll be throwing more often. That's good. It will give them a higher floor. But when in actuality, the guys on the road were a lot riskier than those at home. So for me, I think that in looking at this, I really do want to emphasize finding guys at home. And if there's a guy who is going to be high ownership on the road, pretty much regardless of position, I'm just not going to go there.
You touched on this earlier. Is that what your big takeaway from this is, just fading these high ownership guys and you're just finding values? It's kind of what a DFS is all about here.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically the full takeaway for me is that in most situations, you do want to fade the high ownership player. And I think that there are exceptions. Like I mentioned, home wide receivers, home running backs, I'm fine with that. You know, those bust rates are decent enough where I can accept it. But if they're on the road or, I mean, just in general, if I'm not super sold in the process, then I'm going to fade. You know, if there's a stud like Le'Veon Bell on the road against Buffalo, like that one where it was, you know, kind of obvious that it was going to be a really good play, then I'm still probably going to do it, but it's going to at least force me to second guess myself a bit more often and say, okay, everyone is on Kirk Cousins this week. Should I use Kirk Cousins or should I look to someone maybe in the same price range who may come at lower ownership and try to find them there?
We only got about 30 seconds, Jim. I just wanted to, and we should only spend about 30 seconds on the tight end position, but did you just shake your head when you're going through some of these numbers? And how do you treat this position next year? Is it just like cheapest as you can go?
Yeah, just fade everyone. Don't use a position. So basically at tight end, like, we're looking at point chasing. 75% of tight ends scored fewer points when they were chalky than they did the previous week.
Wow.
So I'm just going to try to figure out who will be chalky at tight end, fade those players, and look elsewhere because it really is not worth it. It was the same thing for defense, and kicker was actually the most reliable one. So Justin Tucker, he can come swim in the club for sure.
Interesting. Yeah, kicker, people forget about them, but in FanDuel, they're so huge, and you get those double-digit points from a kicker, you're on your way for sure. Jim, unfortunately, we're out of time. We got to get out of here. I encourage everyone to read this. It's a fantastic read. Thank you so much for coming on to join me, and good luck in the Fantasy Pros draft tonight. I know you're in the 10th spot, and we don't have much time to talk about who you're going to pick, but hopefully I know you'll walk away with a good team.
I will see you there, and hopefully you're not taking who's on my mind. I will hold that against you.
All right, take care, Jim. We'll talk soon. All right, I'm Chris Meaney. We're out of here. We'll We'll chat tomorrow.